accession number 32971, Reel 7.
You just come into this house and you're taking your...
That's right, and the lambs are all settled in. And then...
It was real luxury for them, wasn't it?
Oh, what was that? You can get a bath as well, you see. Mm. It's a proper bath. Anyway, the old man said to me then, Sergeant Major then, I have to have been promoted. I don't know.
You were acting Sergeant Major, weren't you?
I was acting Sergeant Major. No, I was acting Sergeant Major. Anyway, so the CO said to me, he said, look, he said, to get them all settled in. Because by that time, the other platoons had moved up as well. The complete company were all around Lubeck. About five platoons altogether, HQ, workshops and all that. And the CO said, when you've all got settled in, he said, I want you to, you and the quartermaster, seeker man, go round and give them a rum ration. So we got them all settled in, and he said, I want to get them on parade. He said, I want to say a few words to them and thank them, and then you can give them a rum ration. So I got them on parade, and he says, now, thank you, man, for what you've done, and appreciate it, and all this and the other. He says, I've two very important announcements to make today. First of all, the war in Europe has finished. That was the second. Secondly, it's the Sergeant Major's birthday. You rotten devil. And then when that's over, the quartermaster and I, went round giving them a rum ration. They got the old tin mugs there, And we got these stone jars with the army rum in, like treacle it was, Of course, half of them were not tipsy. I saw that was sufficient left for the quartermaster now to have
it. That was a tremendous relief for you all.
Yeah. And that was the second rum ration we'd had during the whole campaign. You see, you only issued rum on very inclement conditions. I remember in Normandy, it belted down with rain, well, for 2 or 3 days, sleeping in these slit trenches. And I remember, just like a grave they were, and you got down in the bottom and used to put the ground sheet over you, and wondering the rain's coming down, settled in the bottom of the slit trench. I'm laying there and pulling my feet up, because a bit further, and I'm bent lying like this, Couldn't get up because it was shelling. And we got a rum ration then. The next one we got was in Germany when the day of the war finished. Now then, you want me to go on from there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
From Lubeck, after about 3 weeks, we moved up to the Schleswig-Holstein area near the Kiel Canal to a place called Neumünster. Did I give you a copy of that little story I wrote?
You did.
Well, I'm coming on to that more now. I got to Neumünster in these German barracks, and they'd all been, bombed, and some of the windows were... The buildings were left standing, but the windows were... It was out. So, the Royal Engineers gave me the task of... taking a convoy of vehicles down, right back down to the Ruhr, to about the only remaining glass factory that was in production in the Ruhr, at a place called near Wuppertal. I thought, that's handy. Because these German people I knew way back before the war in Doncaster, who I'd palled about with, they was at Wuppertal, you see. So, it took me about 2 days to get down to Wuppertal. Got the roads were badly unbombed, and we got this glass factory, and got loaded up with different sizes of glass and all this. And I've got about 10 lorries, I think, 10 vehicles. And I had a 1500 weight Bren gun truck. We always had one of those for escort, with a Bren gun on it. And telling lies, I went on my motor right then. I was riding this Bengal truck. Loaded up, and then I wasn't going to move up till the next day to go back. So I said to cuss it right now. I said, right, this June then, was it about June? And I said to the Bengal truck driver, I said, come on, I said, we're going on a little trip about 15 miles away to Wolverton. So off we went, got to Wolverton, absolutely flattened, because right in the row, you know.
Mm.
And at Wolverton, they had an overhead railway that run round the town, very famous it was. And I can see it now, all hanging twisted, you know, into the river Wolver, you know, shocking state. Well, Bemberg's silk factory had their headquarters at Wolverton. They're the people who built this one in Doncaster previously. So I made a few inquiries, best I know, with the Bemberg's. Well, it was kaput, you know, it bombed. I said, where was it? I found it. And it was really flattened, but the gatehouse was left, you know, the gatehouse. That was still standing and part of the building. So I went in this gatehouse. One of the blokes who was in there, I recognised him, he recognised me. I'd seen him 6 years previous in Doncaster. He starts making all the excuses for the war, you know, and it all did. I said, where's Thingelings? You know where Thingelings live? Yeah, he directed me to where they were. They were in these bomb damaged flats. I remember Merriman Street, got the Ackerstrass. And did I give you a copy of that?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's the particulars I'm talking about now are in there.
Yes.
And, of course, it's all, I say, it's all in there. I knocked on the door and the Mrs. Pingham had come to the door. Nearly collapsed, you know. Wilhelm. He's called me Wilhelm, not William. I know you would come, you know, and all this. Anyway, I went inside. She was very upset, of course, and asked her where Paul was, my old friend, you know. Paul is told he's dead. Russia, killed in Russia. But I thought that was it, because when I walked in, they got a mantelpiece there like that, and she got a photograph of her, Paul in his army uniform and some flowers around it.
Mm.
I thought, oh, hello. Because I'm, you know, where's Paul in Russia, dead. And I talked a bit. And then I said, where is Henrik, husband, my father? And he's a right Nazi, turned out to be. Oh, Henrik is working for the British Army on the repairing the roads, you know. I said, oh, because I know what happened. They rounded up as many Nazis as they could do and put them to work on jobs like repairing roads, you know, hard labour. Oh, I said, was he a Nazi then? Yes, he was. I told him not to be in all this. And I said, Nazi when he was in Doncaster? Oh, yes, yes. Mm. It was a proper little spy ring they've got there, you know.
Mm.
Anyway, I'm sat there talking and to her and... I haven't got all this in that little story. It kept it me. But I sat talking to her and she made me a cup of coffee out of dried acorns or something, you know, Sats coffee. And talking the best way I could. And I'd forgotten all about my driver, the Bengal truck who was outside. And I'd said to him when I went in, I said, look, I don't know what's going to happen, but if I'm not out here within 10 minutes or so, I said, come and see what's happening. No, I didn't know what reception I've got. So, I've been there more than 10 minutes, I'm sat talking to him, all of a sudden, bang, the door burst open. Are you all right, Sarge, you know? And he said, I better go and travel with his Tommy gun. This poor woman, she tried out of the wits. I said, what the hell are you? He said, well, you told me in 10 minutes, he said, I'm getting bothered. I said, oh, thank you very much. I said, she's bothered now. Anyway, and that was it, and then we drove back to Neumünster, and I was there until I got made Sergeant Major in between, because our Sergeant Major had gone, the one who'd been with us all the war. So the promotion was so slow in our company, because we were all regulars and ex-regulars. Mm. And our CO, the normal drill, they used to, when the war got advancing, they used to take people from these regular companies, experienced men, like myself, and post them to a newly formed company, you know, and we got what you call rapid promotion. Mm. But our CO, he wouldn't let go of any of us. Therefore, you're stepping into a dead man's shoes to get promotion. And because I was a sergeant right back in Ireland 3 or 4 years previous, you know. Anyway, I was sergeant major, and I was there until just before Christmas 45, and I got remobbed. My service expired March 46, but I got 3 months leave, you know, I got all the most points you could get. You got so many points for service and so many points from age and all that, you know. Because I was in from the start of the war and got full points. Anyway, my service took me to March 46. That was my actual discharge date. But I got discharged just a week before the Christmas, and I got 3 months leave paid, you know, gratuity and all that. And I came home.
Had you thought about staying on in the regular service?
Oh, yes. Well, of course, the CO begged of me to sign on in when I was in Neumünster. He said, well, look, you've got 12 years service in. He said, well, yeah. He said, you're on your way. And of course, I was getting decent pay then, you see. Sergeant Major, I think I was getting about 12 shillings a day, something like that, was a lot of money. And but then, he said, I'd got my wife, and I had two kids then. My eldest son, who was 78, who lived at Nottingham, and the middle son, Peter, who was 65. He was born in. When was he, man?
1944.
He was born in January 45. That's right, yeah. He's a result of my last leave before the invasion.
So when you got home, there was a great celebration. It must have been.
Oh, yeah. But wonderful. What I'm saying, you were saying about. Didn't I studied this signing on bit. I thought, well, I've only 9 years to do for what you call a pontoon, 21 years, and you got pension then, Ben. But I thought, well, all the war I've been away most of the time. They were sending a lot of people out to the Far East still then. But, yes. Anyway, I thought, no, I've had enough. It's not fair on the wife, you know. So I didn't sign on.
So that was lovely coming home.
Oh, it was, yeah. Well, it was, but I'd come home to her, nowhere to live. And
was she living with your family?
No, well, my wife's family lived at Works up in Nottinghamshire. And my family lived in Doncaster, that's about 18 miles away. Well, my mother couldn't accommodate her. She got my sister and her two kiddies, whose husband was still in the army in Italy. She got my brother, who wasn't married, my eldest brother. There was no room for me. My work was in Doncaster, where I was hoping to be, anyway. And so I couldn't. Well, there wouldn't have been any room for me. The wife's parents at work's up anyway, because she's got a sister there. And so I thought, oh dear, what am I going to do? So my mother said, look, she says, where we used to live in Doncaster when I was a boy, a place called Coronation Road, where I went to school. Road terraced houses, right, Coronation Street. And she says, there's Mr. Harding there, his wife had died, and he was there when we used to live there when I was a lad, 10 years previous. She says, a widow on his own, she says, why don't you go down and see if he can put you up and live in his room, what he's called rooms, you know. So I went down this winter's night, a few days before Christmas. Anyway, I saw him. Yeah. He recognised me, because last time he'd seen me, I'd be about 13 years of age, you see, and of course I'm going into 20 now, but anyway, recognised me. He'd be 70 odd then, he was in the Boer War, so and I explained, and well, I don't know, but I said, well, I said, my wife would look after you as well, your meals and all like that, where neighbours had to be doing, you know. So, all right, so he let me go there. I moved my belongings from my wife's place at Worksop. I got a taxi with a trailer attached to it, and we put all our worldly belongings on that trailer on Boxing Night, 1945, to go from Worksop to Doncaster, where I was going to live. And I'll never forget, it was thick fog. And I walked most of the way from Worksop to Doncaster in front of the taxi. Yeah? And eventually got there, unloaded the belongings, and we said to the taxi driver, said, look, I'll stop and have a cup of tea and that, while it clears a bit. So he had a cup of tea, and I thought, well, I don't envy him driving back to Worksop in this. Went to the front door, opened the front door, and it was clear as a bell. It had all cleared, yeah. But you remember all these little things, don't you? You know, something you can't remember. And that was it. We settled in there and lived in these rooms for... Of course, it's not part of the war story, is it?
Well, it's just a sort of end to how you finished. What sort of job did you get?
We settled in and I got a job lorry driving. Lorry driving, it's the only thing I do really, that and mechanics. And lorry driving.
Did you miss the army? Did you miss the army
comradeship? I did that, yeah. Yes, I missed it terrible. I missed them. Took some settling down, you know, with the... you missed your comrades and that, you know. And I could tell you another little story. Talking about, did you miss your friends? I used to have nightmares and all sorts of things, you know, for the first few months. And this old boy who we lived with, he was turned 70, but he was still working. They did, you know, at a factory just down the road. And I was lorry driving, and I used to have to get up at 5 in the morning to get to the garage by about 6:30, where I went. And as I used to be, I'd be leaving home about 6:15 in the morning. And as I went out, it was our arrangement that I gave him a shout for him to get up to go to work about 8:00. And I'd go out and shout, Jim! And off I'd go. This particular night, I had a nightmare. And I'm driving the lorry through Doncaster, and I saw a chap on point duty. And to me, it was Jim Lucky, who lived in Plymouth, who was with me all through the war in my platoon. He took a pub in Plymouth after the war. He's dead now. And he's on point duty in Doncaster, and I'm driving my lorry past, and I shout, Jim! Jim! Yeah. Well, of course, old Mr. Harding, sleeping in the next bedroom, heard me. And he got up, and went downstairs, and made himself a cup of tea, all that old gas ring and that, you know. And I looked, got his old watch out, you know, as he was coming round there. Had a look to see about time, see if it was nearly 8:00, ready to go. It's about 3:30 in the morning. I'm still in bed. Well, he said, what are you messing about, you? But that's what things happened to me.
Looking back on your service, was it something that you're really glad you did and wouldn't have missed, or
something
that you're glad you did and wouldn't have missed?
Oh yes, definitely, yes. I wouldn't have missed it. No, I wouldn't.
Any regrets?
No, not really. Well, regret the war started, of course, but you know, the condition wouldn't have it. No, I didn't regret joining the army. We had a rough time in them days, but you had some fun, you know, comradeship. Anyway, I could go on and on what happened then, you know. I mean, I lorry driving and doing that for a couple of years, and I thought, oh, I'm not doing this all my life.
So what did you end up doing?
Well, because we'd saved during the war, which the wife had been working a bit, and I'd got promotion, we saved every penny we could. And what with the gratuity we got and everything, I think when the war finished, I got about £800.
That's a lot of money.
Then. It would buy a house. And there we are, living in these rooms and one thing or another. I was tempted. I thought, well, shall I go the old hog and buy a house? You know, I thought, well, if I do, I've got no capital left then. I'll be a lorry driver, none of that. Anyway, stuck it a bit. Oh, I'm overrunning the story. After we'd lived with this old boy for about 18 months, he packed in and went to live with his daughter in London, Barnett. And he came home one Saturday, and he'd been in town, and I see he threw the keys on the table. He said, there you are, they're yours, keys to the house. I said, what do you mean? He said, I'm packing in, I'm going to live with Jane. He said, and I've been down to see the landlord, and he said, you can have it. And the rent was 11 shillings a week. That's 55 pence, you know. So that was, a bombshell. It was a godsend, I don't know. But anyway, I've been lorry driving for a couple of years, and I thought, I'm not doing this. So I'm going through Doncaster to park my lorry up at the garage one night, and I was building a big housing estate. I thought, right, that's it. So I went in the garage, I said to the boss, where I was, I want to leave on Friday. On Saturday, he said, well, you're supposed to give a week's notice, you know. I said, well, can you overlook that? Can I leave on Friday? Yeah, all right. So I left. I went home to my wife. I said, I'll pack my job in. Well, what are we going to do? I said, I'm going to buy a lorry, and we're going to go around that big housing estate, the building, and all around there. With greengrocery. So, of course, I'm going to buy a lorry. A job to buy a lorry in them days, all you could buy was ex-army lorries. So I bought one of these ex-army, what we used to call Bren gun trucks, 1,500 weight. Bought that, saw it advertised in the paper somewhere. Took it to a coach builder and had a few alterations made in the bodywork, you know. And then I said to my wife, look, you know more about vegetables and fruit than I do. I said, being a woman, you know. You have to come round with me for a couple of weeks, you know, to give me a hand. Well, I set off that first day. I went to the fruit wholesalers in Doncaster and got loaded up with different fruit, vegetables, potatoes and all that lot, you know. Off we went round this estate, knocking on doors, you know. Well, are you coming round here regularly? Yeah, I said, we'll be round twice a week. I said, on a Tuesday and a Friday. And the other half of the estate, it was a big estate, I was going to do Wednesdays and Saturdays. Right. Off we went. And we built up around like that. Yeah. I remember the first day we took £3.
Oh,
my God. I've still got it, an old handbag, leather handbag, on the strap slung round here, but she was the money, you know. I've still got it, I keep tools in it now. I wouldn't get rid of it. And I say, hey, sure, I'm gonna give somebody the wrong change, I'd be lost any, you know. So after that £3 we probably made 15 shilling profit, you know. And then it built up and up and up till we were getting a good living out of it. And then I said to the corporation council, I said, are you going to build any shops on there? Well, we are eventually, but you know what it is, houses come first. But I said, well, can you put my name down for one? They said, all right. So I said, in the meantime, could I put a temporary one up myself? Well, we'll have to see that at the next council meeting, or, you know. Anyway, it'll pass. And I bought two army Nissanuts, you know, Nissanuts.
Yeah.
And I got a chap to help me, and I made one big one out of these two. Army Nissanut was about 30 foot long, I think. about 15 wide. I made it about 40 foot long, and I put halfway down, or a third way down, I put a partition and made that front part a shop. The back part I put on double doors like a garage, and I made that a warehouse and where to park my lorry. Got that set up, and then when that was all organised, the wife looked after the little shop part, and I went out with my lorry on the rounds. And then did that until my son here, who's here now, was born. 1952, he's 58 now. And so, of course, I had to pack the round in then, because the wife wouldn't be looking after the shop well. So I packed the round in, and I built up a fairly decent trade then in the shop, and I looked after the shop. And then they eventually built some proper shops, and I moved into that, you know. And then I got fed up with that, and I bought a fish and chip shop and run back for a bit. And then I went back, I had my own. I was building a big estate outside of Doncaster, in the rural district council, and I knew a builder had got some land there, and he got permission for four shops, and I said, I'll have one of them when you build it. And that was my own, I bought that, you know, do what you like. Council couldn't tell you what to do and what they couldn't do. And then did that till 1970, and moved on to Devon. And the wife said, what are you going to do when we get to Devon? Oh, by that time, my two sons, elder sons, were married. Douglas had just gone to Bristol University, he was 18. I said, that's it. I said, we're selling up, and we're going to move down to Devon. What are we going to do when we get there? I said, oh, anything. I'm deck chairs out on the beach. Anyway, I bought a new bungalow at Dolphin Court Road there, no, it was not. Benetto's were building them. Lovely bungalow. Fantastic view. And I hadn't been in it a month, and I was getting itchy feet, and made a few inquiries, you know, contacts and that. I got on, you know, Hook Hills?
Yeah.
Well, that used to be a big holiday camp.
It did.
It was the biggest in Torbay, really. Belonged to Rogers, the farmers. I got a shop on there. I'd been down previous years and stayed on that camp, and thought, well, I wouldn't mind a shop on this camp, you know. I got one eventually. And then then Bowles started building on it. He sold out to Bowles after about 2 or 3 years. So, and of course, it was uncertain then. I mean, they were building in the first couple of years all right in the shop, but you could see that it was going to die away. So I thought about the future, so I got another shop. You know Beverly Park? It belonged to them on one of their camps called Marine Park in Goodrington. I got a shop on there. And we ran that until 1981, till I was 64. That was the end of the story.
And then you were retired, lovely. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for talking to me. It's been very interesting.
I mean, it makes sense what I've said, don't
it? It does.
I don't know how you're going to decipher it or what, you know.
It's all very interesting, all part of the social history. Thank you again.